Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Deal Maker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, a founder that not only has done it once but twice. And the second time around, you know, he's building this rocket ship. You know, we're going to be talking about all types of the good stuff that we like to hear when it comes to building and scaling, how he actually started his companies with zero experience on the domains that he was operating in or he intended to actually operate in. Also how he went from pivoting not only in the product, but also pivoting on the location because he was in India, then now he's in the US. So it's a very interesting transition that many, many of us entrepreneurs, including myself, you know, we have experienced, you know, too, as immigrants. And then also moving into the US, you know, and having that global approach at building the business. So again, really inspiring conversation ahead of us. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Srini K.A. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Alejandro. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for hosting me.
So born in Chennai, India, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up there?
Chennai is probably one of the hottest cities around in India. So it was hot. A lot of memories about heat and summer growing up. I used to always wonder when we read poems that says, hey, nice and warm. We never associated nice and warm together. Nice was cold for us. It was a really interesting time growing up in the 80s in Chennai.
And how was it like there too, like with the, I know there's a lot of pressure around education, you know, the culture, and you're either an engineer or you're a doctor. In your case, you decided engineer. So that problem-solving approach, where did that come from for you?
Growing up, I actually wanted to be a poet. A tremendous pressure from my parents to become an engineer. So I ended up being an engineer. Loved computers. I mean, the first time I actually touched computers, I really fell in love with them. Always liked. And just as a thought exercise to myself, when I walk, I look around stuff and say, hey, what if I could actually do it differently? So in that sense, problem solving has always been fun for me.
And what was that, you know, that experience too of coming to the US as well, you know, working for a US company, like it was Texas Instruments at the time, you know, what was that culture shock? Because I mean, the US, it's a little bit of different than, you know, from perhaps, you know, where you came from India or from where I came from Spain. So how was that of a culture shock for you?
Actually, I worked in Texas Instruments in India, in Bangalore. Okay. So it was a transition in that sense, spending the 2 years with Texas Instruments. I think TI was the first company, tech company that actually started a development center in India, one of the first pioneers in India to start tech. And then I moved to the U.S., spent about a year and a half in the U.S. working for a startup ideas here. And that was a huge transition, one from warmer, hot climate. That was in Minneapolis. So it was a huge switch from a climate perspective, but also very interesting to have, you know, completely different culture, different way of working, if you will, Alejandro. So
Well, also warmer when it comes to the type of duties that you're doing, because I mean, obviously when you go from a company like Texas Instruments to a startup, you know, you're putting fires out every day, all day. So, I mean, that was quite a big deal for you to make that transition from a big company to a small company. I mean, what really pushed you in that direction?
So by a couple of years out of college, we had decided that we will start something. So wanted to get some experience working in a startup. You know, being out at a large company like TI, we were primarily, you know, at such a narrow view. Our aperture was very, very narrow in terms of what we could see. So wanted to work in a startup to just gain the experience. So spent about a year and a quarter with ideas before we went back and went back to India and started our previous company.
That's amazing. Now in your case, you know, you started, you know, your company, your previous one, your first one, and that was Impulse Soft. And you started that with a bunch of friends. So how did you get the band together, and why did you guys think that this is what made sense? Because you had no experience, you know, in this segment.
Absolutely. So the way I became an entrepreneur was fairly accidental. One of my friends was a classmate from college. came to me and said, hey, I want to start a company. Do you want to join? I, being a nice guy, nice friend, didn't want to say no. So I said yes. That's pretty much how I got started with the whole entrepreneurship journey. I had no idea what an entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur meant. Never had anybody, I hadn't even known anybody that has been ever been in a business, even a small shop, right? So in that sense, was completely, completely new. Was staying with my brother, so it was easy. All expenses taken care of already, so it was a fairly easy risk to take. And the intent for us to start that company was to build an enduring brand out of India, a product brand like a Sony or an HP. That's what we actually started off with. You know, this was the 1990s, late 1990s, where there were a lot of service companies out of India that were successful, but there weren't any product companies. So we thought, hey, let's build a global brand out of India. So that was the original intent. Of course, we had no idea what it would take to get there. We were sufficiently young and naive. All we had was this grand dream about building this product company. So we ended up, you know, trying a whole bunch of things. I mean, this was again this was in India. Mobile phones weren't popular. This were pagers. So we built a pager system for blood banks. We built an activity-based costing, an accounting system for textile industry. We built a simulator for a chip design. We tried all sorts of stuff before we actually saw this opportunity. That whole Bluetooth wireless, was coming up. And we thought, hey, let's go build something to learn about the product, not necessarily to sell, not necessarily to make money, but to learn how to build a product. So we ended up building a Bluetooth software stack.
So then tell us about how that journey went, because even though it was the first company, it was the first exit. You know, you guys had a positive outcome. So what, walk us through how that journey towards, you know, that acquisition, you know, how did that go?
Yeah, so once we landed up on doing Bluetooth, we built a software stack. And little did we realize that we were one of the three or four companies globally that was building those. So there was suddenly a lot of demand, customers calling in, asking us for, hey, can you actually provide us a software stack because we're building this Bluetooth product? Again, remember, this was 2000 timeframe. So we had Siemens from Germany, we had Acer, and then subsequently Samsung, Nokia, Sony Ericsson, bunch of companies that ended up using our product, eventually Broadcom, Texas Instruments. So went from absolutely nothing to become one of the leaders in Bluetooth wireless software stack. Eventually, the product was getting commoditized. So we wanted to look at building the next level of product, which was essentially getting into consumer products, Bluetooth wireless headphones, and so on. So we wanted to raise some money, started talking to a bunch of potential investors. One thing led to the other, we had a couple of companies, some of the strategics coming and asking us, saying, hey, would you be willing to sell the company to them so that they could build out the Bluetooth product? So eventually got acquired by Surf, which was the largest GPS semiconductor company at that point of time, NASDAQ listed, which is now part of Qualcomm. Decided that, hey, we've spent the last 7 years, this was, you know, in 2005, spent the last previous 7 years, time to look at next thing.
And how was that visibility that gave you, you know, into the full, I would say, cycle of a company? Because now, you know, not only you did the incubation, the launch, the financing, the scaling, but then also the exiting. What kind of visibility does that give you?
This was phenomenal as a learning experience for us, right? And I've been an engineer, software engineer at heart. I had no idea what an accounts receivable was, what an accounts payable was, or how much, you know, what a term sheet was, right? So pretty much from everything from, you know, what it takes to run a business, what it takes to raise money, what it takes to exit the business. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal experience overall. We sold the company for about $15 million in total. So it was an okay exit. Obviously, we were still young in the 20s, you know, where had, you know, a fairly good dollar amount in the bank, but nowhere near what we wanted to become, which was the Sony or HP out of India. So from that perspective, was a failure from where we started. But the experience was just amazing. So gave us the confidence that we can go build anything that we want and can be successful. At least we knew what we didn't know.
Now, in your case, you know, like how was that transition, you know, from, you know, building, you know, ImpulseSoft, you know, to now taking it easy for 2 years, which is the vesting and resting, you know, being, you know, with the acquirer, to then all of a sudden thinking, hey, I got to do something. I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So as part of the transition, when we sold the company, we were fairly clear that in 2 years, we'll actually quit and start something new, right? So we, I mean, at heart, we were entrepreneurs. So wanted, we're fairly sure. So there was a 2 year, we had committed to the company, acquiring company that will stay back for at least 2 years. So the second year anniversary on the day of the acquisition, the second year anniversary, we quit. And the next day we started Amagi, which is our current company. So the intent was, you know, now that we have learned our lesson at some level, we are hopefully wiser than what we were. So this time we actually said, hey, let's go build something really, really big that's enduring, that's going to go beyond the three of us, that's going to, you know, be around well beyond us. So we want to build something really, truly groundbreaking. So we set up three goals when we actually started the company, saying, hey, these are the three things that actually should be the criteria if you're successful. What would success look like? One, it should be truly scalable, a company, global in nature. It can actually transcend barriers. Two, it should change the industry. And we didn't know what industry it was going to be. So we just decided that whatever industry it's going to be, a pre-Amagi and a post-Amagi, the industry should look different because of us. We should have been able to influence the industry, impact the industry in a way that if we actually change it. And three, it should be fun. I mean, it should be, you know, something that we would enjoy doing. So we took these, obviously we decided to start with India-focused business, given India was blooming at that point of time. We said, hey, let's go build something for India, but it is to be truly, truly scalable business.
So then why did you guys decide, you know, when it came to obviously building a scalable business on Amagi to be the one that you will be pulling the trigger on?
Right. So when we actually, you know, thought about Amagi, then we decided, hey, we started looking around saying, hey, what are the big opportunities? What are the massive gaps in the market that we could address using technology? And we were looking at saying, hey, what are the big changes happening in the industry? What are the second order effects? What are the third order effects? Are we able to, you know, look at gaps there? And we looked at tons and tons of different ideas. Again, the three of us that actually co-founded, again, we were classmates in college. We worked at Texas Instruments together. We had founded the previous company together. So had some, you know, phenomenal relationship, but come from completely different thought processes, right? So I personally, I'm somebody that's actually much, much more data-driven. Will want data for everything to see, you know, is there proof? You know, tell me, you know, why this would work. One of my other colleagues is a super optimist, would come in and say, hey, next 10 years, this is what is going to happen. You know, future is very rosy and we can actually build, you know, super confident. And the third person, she is a pessimist by nature. She'll tell me, hey, she'll come up with every reason as to why it won't work. So very interesting, diverse background. So as we started looking at, hey, what are the different things that we can actually do? Debated a whole bunch of stuff coming from different viewpoints. And one of the opportunities that all three of us converged on was this broader shift of television viewing from traditional cable TV to streaming internet-based viewing. We thought this was back in 2008. We thought that's going to be, you know, certainly going to be a big trend going forward. At that point of time, people are watching YouTube on desktop, but otherwise people weren't really streaming TV. So we thought that's going to happen in the next few years. Let's go build software that can actually power that so that all of us can watch personalized television and personalized advertising. So that was the premise on which we started. We thought, hey, it's a massive opportunity, can be global, can truly, you know, change the industry if you're able to build something that can deliver personalized television for everyone.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Now comes 2017. You know, you thought that you were in the path that you had hoped for. But then all of a sudden, you realize that it's time to adjust to what the market is asking you for. And obviously, quite bumpy. You guys decide to obviously listen to the market, and you let go of almost everyone in the entire company. I mean, that's not easy. So what happened there? Walk us through that.
Yeah, so once we started, got on this path, right, we eventually ended up, we actually pivoted even in 2008 as we started with this idea. We figured that a streaming was still not happening. It's going to take some time. So we pivoted twice within the year as we went and, you know, build products, went out to the market and actually got feedback. Where we ended up building an ad tech company out of India, focusing on geo-targeted advertising on cable TV. So this grew to be a fairly large business, one of the fastest growing businesses, media businesses in India. We actually twice got selected within the top three of the fastest growing M&D businesses by Deloitte 500 in APAC. So growing really, really fast, but we had a couple of big headwinds coming towards us. One was structurally, you know, while we were growing, we were bleeding money. The business model required us to consistently fund the business. And two, there were fundamental channel conflicts with our partners, which are our television networks, where they would see conflicts in terms of the same customer base that we are going after. So by 2017, we had become the largest ad tech, TV ad tech, television ad tech company in India. A fairly fast-growing business, but as I said, not so profitable. We had a 65-people sales team that was actually going and selling into local advertisers across India, working with 35 television networks. We're the second largest buyer of inventory across TV after Unilever in India. So was well-pushing, but clearly was not sustainable. So we decided to pivot in 2017 to a much more of a SaaS technology business. Ended up letting go of our entire ad sales team, which was about a 65-people team. We kept the tech team, but the entire advertising and operations team had to be let go. They were some of the best people that we had hired. So it was heartbreaking. They were friends. I mean, a lot of them were friends, you know, fairly close ones. Was really, really difficult to let them go. But we had to pivot. I mean, as a company, we had less than $5 million in cash. It was not sustainable and we were bleeding. So we ended up pivoting to a completely a tech SaaS business in 2017. I ended up moving to the US to go build it on a much more global scale.
So for the people that are listening to really get it, what ended up being the business model of Amagi? How are you guys making money?
So ours is a very simple business. We actually provide subscription software to television networks, content owners, and sports rights owners, help them to create streaming channels and deliver them to viewers. You know, using ad-supported models or otherwise. So they pay us a monthly fee for every channel, every television content that they stream to consumers. And we also partake in terms of any advertising revenues that they would actually make.
So also, how was the fundraising journey here? Because I know that you guys have raised quite a little bit of money, you know, quite some zeros there. So so also, you know, there's a combination there between equity and secondaries as well. So any, you know, light that you could provide, you know, on that. You know, I'm sure that it will be beneficial too for the people that are listening, so that they can really get to understand that you can actually, you know, sell some stock, you know, in your company before it goes public or before it gets acquired and gets some liquidity. So walk us through, you know, the fundraising, you know, the experience, and then also the equity versus secondaries.
Absolutely. So we raised our, I mean, when we started the company, we raised a seed round from our an angel investor who was an angel investor in our previous company and who had seen the returns, who knew us, who trusted us. So he wrote us a check even before we decided what business we are going to get into. So we raised, the initial raise was about $5 million we actually raised. We also invested our own money. So that's the initial raise. Subsequently, as we built the India ad tech business, we raised close to about $50 million over the next 5 to 7 years from Premji Invest, one of the largest private equity funds in India, and Mayfield, as well as KKR funded Emerald Media. Essentially, between the three, we ended up raising about $50 million or so. As I mentioned, by the time we got to 2017, we had pretty much burned through most of the cash. So we had to become much more self-sustainable. So we actually pivoted, brought it into break-even, where we were actually self-sustaining as a business. But obviously, from a growth perspective, we went back to the market, raised money from Accel and Norwest Ventures. Last year, we did another round between Accel and General Atlantic Partners, as well as Avtar. So over the course of the last 15 years, we've raised about $300 million, a mix of both primary and secondary. The initial investors, Mayfield, KKR, they've exited through secondary rounds from the new investors that actually came in. We also had a buyback for some of our employees so that, you know, people that have stayed with us, so we could actually provide some liquidity as part of the secondary raise. So we provided a buyback option for all the employees as we did the last round raise. So it's been a very, very, so totally we raised about, give or take, about $300 million as a mix. Yeah, it's been a very, very interesting journey. Today we have Norwest, General Atlantic, Avtar, and Premji Invest, apart from, of course, Accel. As part of the investor mix.
And also, you were alluding to earlier, you know, when you guys got together, you know, to really build this business, you wanted to build something scalable. And when it comes to scale, hey, you guys are generating big numbers already. So for the people that are listening to really get an idea on the scope and size of Amagi today, I mean, anything that you can share at a high level?
We announced public numbers a year and a half back. We crossed $100 million in ARR a couple of years back. Obviously, we have been growing. We're growing at about 30 to 40% year on year, every year. And now we used to grow at 100%. Obviously, we went from zero to $100 million in 5 years. Certainly the largest SaaS technology company in the media industry. Today, specifically focused on media and entertainment. Primary, with primary revenues in the US, about 75% of the revenues in the US, about 20% in Europe, and the rest spread across the world. Work with pretty much all the major television network brands, work with the major networks, most of the major networks, most of the major sports leagues, work with the biggest studios in the business, work with the largest station groups, about 350 odd customers, pretty much who's who in the industry. If you look at the top 100 media companies today in the US, we'll be working with about 80% of them as their backend SaaS technology vendor to help them run their broadcast on the cloud, to help them stream their content, to help them monetize their content using advertising.
So in this case, you know, we were alluding to earlier, you know, the investors that you guys have onboarded and the money that you've raised. Obviously, you know, investors, they bet on a vision, and as well as your customers, your employees. So imagine you were to go to sleep tonight, Srini, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Amagi is fully realized. What does that world look like?
The world will look like where we become the operating system for our media and entertainment companies. Every media business out there is able to use Amagi as their underlying platform to run their entire business. What does that mean? As a media company, I acquire or produce content. I manage my content. I distribute my content to either, you know, streaming platforms or my own direct-to-consumer app. I monetize that content using advertising or subscription, right? If Amagi is able to provide a platform for all of these media companies to, you know, acquire, produce, manage, distribute, market, and monetize their content as the underlying platform, I think we'll be very, very, very happy. So we want to become the media operating system, the media cloud for the M&D industry.
Well, that looks like a beautiful world, Srini. Now, we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past and doing so with a lens of reflection. So let's say I put you into a time machine, and this is the moment where, you know, you are literally, you know, thinking about, you know, you're doing your 2-year vesting, you know, the vesting and resting that we were alluding to, you know, earlier. And let's say, you know, it's that day where you're like, enough is enough. I'm going to go and build my next company. And let's say on your way out of the building, you're able to stop that younger Srini, and you're able to give that younger Srini, you know, because we're talking about 16 years ago, one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
If there is one piece of advice, I would say focus on a really, really growing market. You know, the first business at Amagi when we actually started, we were pretty much creating the entire ecosystem. We were fighting against the entire industry to build a completely new business model. If there's one advice, I would say focus on a really large market. Focus on a growing market where the tide is with you, not against you. So a lot of work can go in, and you can be, I mean, tirelessly working towards actually building out a company. But if the market forces against you, that's going to be really, really difficult. So I think the biggest would be think as big as you can. Think in the biggest way possible and focus on market where there is a larger market growth. And you're not trying to take, you know, focus on blue ocean rather than red ocean.
I love it. So Srini, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Well, the best way would be my email would be kas@amagi.com. AMAGI.com or my LinkedIn, which is linkedin.com/kasvasan, KASVASAN.
Amazing. Well, Srini, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Pleasure to be here, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.